Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Please be seated. Justice Hecht is in Washington today, having been appointed by the Chief Justice, the real Chief Justice, to be on the Rules Advisory Committee for Civil Rules for the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, but he will participate in the deliberation and decision in these cases. We have three cases to be argued today. In the order of the presentation, they are as follows. In Texas Department of Public Safety versus Ben Barlow from Brazos County. In the matter of Paula Ann Locke, a disciplinary appeal. And Monsanto Company versus Campbell, Bulsani, and others from Brazoria County. In each of these matters, the court is allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. Petitioner or appellant may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising our marshal. We will take a brief recess in between each argument and complete the arguments by noon. These arguments are being recorded by our clerk, and you may purchase a tape of any argument for a nominal fee. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Texas DPS versus Barlow.
May it please the court, Mr. Kyle Duncan will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, the department's ability to suspend a driver's license for alcohol impairment makes Texas roads safer. The legislature intended uniform appellate review of these license suspensions, both through a specific grant of jurisdiction in the Transportation Code and also through application of the general jurisdictional statutes.
Where do they specifically mention that judicial review would be through a district court?
In referring to the specific grant of jurisdiction, Justice Abbott?
Yes.
The judicial review is created in Chapter 524 and .041, and the review is extended through application of the APA to the courts of appeals from the first judicial review that is provided in Chapter 524, which is admittedly a modified review. Now,
for the APA analysis, I mean, it's obvious that through this whole scheme that you can go to county court. There's no mandate that you must go to district court.
That is true,
Justice. The APA appeals specifically provided only for district courts.
That is true, Justice Abbott.
So how did it differ from county court to the court of appeals?
Because when Chapter 524 of the APA is explicitly incorporated into the, I'm sorry, Chapter 524 of the Transportation Code is explicitly incorporated into the APA appeals provision, the literal wording of that provision, must be read in context of this modified review procedure that is provided in Chapter 524. And thus, through the rules of statutory construction, we can interpret the phrase in the APA, final district court judgment, as extending review from all trial court determinations under Chapter 524.
No, that's basically rewriting the statute. When it says, obviously you are aware that the legislature has so chosen, it could have said district court or county court.
It could have said
it.
It
didn't say that.
It did not
say
that.
It said solely district court.
That is true.
So why shouldn't we hold them to the words they chose?
Because that would, well, first of all, because when considered in the context of Chapter 524, those words in APA do not have a plain and unambiguous meaning. We must read them in the context of Chapter 524, which may create ambiguity about the legislature's purpose. And second, because reading the literal words in that fashion would create a nonsensical, a haphazard, an illogical scheme of appellate review.
Where in 524 does it say you're guaranteed an appeal to the Court of Appeals?
It does not explicitly say that in 524.
So I'm missing. If under the APA there's only appeal from the district court, not a county court, and if under Section 524 there's no guarantee of the Court of Appeals, there obviously is a huge link missing in the dots you want us to connect.
Well, the link may be supplied through the rules of statutory construction. Because what we have in Chapter 524
is... The first rule of statutory construction is to strictly apply the language chosen by the legislature, is it not?
That is a rule of statutory construction.
Isn't that the most important one for us to apply?
In this case, no, Justice Abbott. And that is because the literal words of the APA, which pre-existed Chapter 524, must be read in the context of a modified scheme of review. The application of 524 to APA creates an ambiguity in the legislative intent and in those words. Because the phrase final district court in the APA cannot be read as, in the Chapter 524 context, should not be read by this court as limiting the extension of review only to this tiny fraction of cases in Chapter 524. That simply doesn't accord with a rational legislative purpose.
But if we look at the APA alone, the use of the word district court in that provision of the APA does not create an ambiguity, does it?
Not if we look at it in the APA alone.
Because typically we are dealing with review of agency decisions that go to the Travis County District Court.
That is correct.
So it is in fact 524 that you're saying creates an ambiguity.
It is that's close to what I'm saying. I'm saying that the 524 incorporates the APA, or the APA incorporates 524, and that's what creates the ambiguity.
Okay, but if the legislature intended, when it drafted the APA and enacted it, to only provide for appeals from district court judgments, and we have no provision in 524 that indicates any intent on the part of the legislature to guarantee or grant a right to appeal, then even if there is an ambiguity, if we are applying rules of statutory construction, why wouldn't we come down on the side of determining that there is no jurisdiction? Because we can find no legislative intent to guarantee a right to appeal from decisions under Chapter 524.
Well, I have two responses to that. First of all, I think that it is reading the APA in too much of an inflexible way to say that the legislature intended that there only be district appeals under the APA from district court judgments. The APA itself recognizes that there may be different routes of appeal. In point 176, it says, unless otherwise provided by law,
okay.
The initial...
Well, then let me ask you this. Is there any case law in which the provision of the APA that we are looking at that uses the words district court judgment, where that language has been interpreted to mean anything but an appeal from an actual district court judgment?
Well, of course, other than the courts of appeals cases, in these cases,
I'm talking about in other contexts.
I'm not aware.
Because there really hasn't been any need to, since those decisions come out of district courts on a regular basis as opposed to county courts at law.
That is perhaps true, and which goes back to my argument that there is a modified scheme that is enacted in Chapter 524. It modifies this first tier of judicial review that we normally have by default under the APA. Under the APA, as you know...
No, what your argument seems to be resting on not so much the preciseness of what the legislature said, but on what you contend the legislature intended.
It rests on what we believe the legislature intended. And
looking at what the legislature intended, apparently there hasn't been a whole lot of light shed on this, but why would it not be fair to conclude that the legislature, knowing how filled the courts are with so many cases altogether, that they wanted to free the courts of appeals from having to deal with potential thousands of appeals from administrative hearings? I would find that to be a fairly reasonable conclusion by the legislature.
I have two responses to that. First of all, if the legislature had wanted to alleviate a backlog of cases, it knew how to do so in this context. It could have specifically excluded the appeal provision in 524 from the APA, which it has done in subchapter 5 of the APA entitled Exclusions. Secondly, it would be unreasonable to...
Would that be similar to the handgun laws, whether it was specifically excluded from the APA?
Well, in the Toon case, that scheme of review was specifically excluded from the APA, as this court recognized in its decision.
But as it winds up, it goes to the Court of Appeals. So even if they specifically excluded it, doesn't mean that that would have been achieved.
Well, that seems true, but given that Toon deals with the general jurisdictional statutes and not the specific jurisdictional statutes, there is still that distinction. Now, of course, we make the argument here that the general jurisdictional statutes will achieve the same result.
Let me ask you that.
Yes.
If we find that the amount of controversy is over 100 miles, we don't reach the specific statutory scheme at all.
That is true. That is a completely independent alternative basis for decision.
So let's talk about that under Toon.
Very well.
What evidence do we have before us in this record as to the value of a drought plan?
Well, Justice O'Neill, it is our primary contention that you don't need record evidence because the statutory law shows that as a matter of law, the value of the privilege at issue here is over $100. However, we do have...
We do have a liability statute for liability insurance.
We do have
it. It doesn't specify... It would strike me that it would depend upon what that insurance costs someone, not the amount of the insurance, and what evidence do we have of what that cost would be.
Well, we can, as I've laid out in my brief, the Texas Department of Insurance, the Commissioner of Insurance, publishes benchmark rates for every Texas county that shows what the average costs, or the benchmark costs can be deviated from by insurance companies by 30% above or below. But it shows what the most insurable drivers will have to pay for minimum mandatory insurance.
Did we take judicial notice of that in this case in any way?
I believe the court can take judicial notice.
Did you in the trial court?
I'm not aware that we did. However,
well, then how do you answer Justice O'Neill's question? What is the evidence? Where does it come from?
Well,
other than your argument now.
Well, we believe that this is a matter of subject matter jurisdiction, and this court can take judicial notice of benchmark rates set by an agency of this state in order to determine the...
Well, couldn't we just... Say another argument is if you have a driver's license, you must have a car, so cars cost more than $20,000, so therefore it could be worth $20,000. You can make any argument for anything that's connected with driving to try to sustain that position.
We are not opening the door, Justice Baker, that far, if for this reason.
Well, you only have to go $100, I understand that, but you can make any argument on what the value of the driver's license without any evidence to support it.
Well, we could make any argument, but we haven't. We have made arguments that tie this insurance idea to the value of the privilege in the driver's license.
But it's literally nothing more than an idea because, as Justice Baker is making clear, just because you have a driver's license doesn't mean you have to have insurance because you may have a license and never drive.
That is certain.
People use it for identification purposes.
That is certain.
So there is no legal nexus.
And a lot of people drive without having insurance on purpose. So what if you get one of those people with a suspension? How are you going to use that criteria to say there's jurisdiction in the court?
I believe this court's decision in Tune answers that question because we are looking to a general measure of the value of the license. We are not looking to the measure of the value of the license in particular cases. Question.
But at least there was something in the record to say that a four-year handgun license cost, $144? But there's absolutely nothing in this record. Isn't that true?
No, actually, that's not true, Justice Baker. At Volume 1, page 68 of the record, and I apologize if I haven't pointed this out in my brief, is the notice of suspension served on Mr. Barlow. And it specifically recognizes that he must pay a $100 reinstatement fee to get his license back. Now, I would add to that that there are other incidents of financial value in the statutory framework. There are penalties associated
with... Let me ask you this. Go ahead. I'm not clear. When and how does the suspended driver's license person pay the $100? After the 90 days is over?
I believe so, Justice Baker, that they must pay that fee in order to get the license.
Get it renewed.
In order to lift the suspension, yes.
It doesn't automatically go away once 90 days has gone by?
I do not believe that they don't pay the reinstatement, but I'm not 100% sure, and I will certainly answer that.
Another question about the argument of overloading the courts of appeals. An argument, it seems to me, can be made that you can only go as high as the county court at law to avoid creating a backlog of cases in the courts of appeals for one reason. And secondly, since these suspensions are only 90 days long, by the time you get to the court of appeals, the suspension is over. So why don't we also have a way to define the intent of the legislature when there's no legislative history? That's exactly why they limited it to the county courts of law, or didn't say otherwise. All this is over as soon as you get to the county court of law. Whatever happens there, that's the end of these.
Well, that's certainly true in the individual cases, but...
We don't have to add any language to any statute to get to that result, do we?
Well, no, you don't, but you also don't have to add language to statutes to get at our result either. You simply have to interpret an incorporated statutory envision as enlarging the words in one statute, which is court in the Glenn Jones case.
Can we enlarge statutes to accomplish the fruition of an argument?
Well, no, the fruition of legislative intent, certainly. That
but you've already answered Justice Abbott that there's no legislative intent that says what you argued today.
Well, I think I said there's no explicit legislative enactment, but I believe there is legislative intent if we look at the scheme of the law as the legislature has enacted it.
Would you explain that? Why from the scheme you glean legislative intent that there was a right to appeal to the Court of Appeals?
Because in Chapter 524, the legislature grants judicial review for the first tier explicitly to one of three courts, county courts of law, county courts and district courts. The legislature then incorporates the APA, which has an appeals provision. And there's no argument in this case that the appeals provision somehow just doesn't apply. But the legislature incorporates this scheme, this appeals provision, that normally allows appeals from trial court determinations from an administrative, a contested administrative hearing. Now we have that's the scheme that I'm talking about. Now, to interpret the creation of that scheme to allow only a tiny fraction of the trial court determinations to go up on appeal seems to me to be nonsensical.
Could there arguably be any other reason for the incorporation of the APA?
Certainly, Justice Sanders.
And what other reasons can we glean from the incorporation of the APA that go to legislative intent?
Off the top of my head, I would say that the standard of review for the review of an administrative determination by the substantial evidence, that's one reason that they can incorporate the APA. But it's certainly does not exclude the APA appeals provision.
Right. And what other reasons would there be for incorporating the APA besides the standard of review and the right to appeal to the Court of Appeals? Any other specific provisions of the APA that impact upon the structure of the license suspension process provided for in 524?
None that I can think of right now.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
The Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the Court, Mr. David Barron will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the Court, counsel.
Mr. Barron, do you know how many counties in Texas do not have county courts at law, have only constitutional county courts with a judge who's not a lawyer? Do you have any idea?
I would hazard a guess. Probably 30 to 40. I'm from Bryan, in my 100-mile radius, there are two counties that fit into that, being Madison and Leon counties, and that is just a ballpark guess.
Okay, so if we were to agree with your position in the lawsuit, we'd have 30 or 40 counties in Texas where you could appeal, and in the remainder of the counties, there would be no right to appeal.
That's correct.
Okay.
What do you think the legislature's reason was for enacting a scheme like that?
I cannot glean a valid reason for that, Your Honor. I don't believe that necessarily should be interpreted as an absurd result.
Just an unreasonable one.
Well, if the legislature does suppose that, appear to be unreasonable on their face.
This is the first time.
No. And since they're meeting, I won't say anything more about that.
What's the current state of facts in your particular case?
I'm sorry, sir?
Judge Baker was talking about the length of these suspensions and the cases being moved and that being a possible reason for minimizing the appeals.
Yes, sir.
What's the current situation in your case?
As I understand it, I was not the trial attorney in the case. My understanding would be the license was suspended, the suspension's over with, and to answer your question, Justice, after the 90-day period of suspension, which is true in this case, there is a $100 reinstatement fee in order to get your driver's license.
Why doesn't that vest jurisdiction under the general jurisdictional statute?
It's my understanding that it's over $100.
Well, what if you added the $24 fee to get your license in the first place? Under Teague, we seem to say that whatever an applicant is willing to pay is some indication of the value, and in order to get your license back, you pay $24 to get it initially and $100 to get it back. Why can't we say that it's the
I think the cost could be considered $100 or $24, but I don't think it would be considered both because
That's what he's out of pocket, though.
I'm sorry, sir.
I mean, your client is out of pocket $124 plus anything.
Correct.
Correct.
Which is not enough, but no. I would acknowledge the $100 fee can be taken into context. That is the out of pocket expense to him. It's the $100. But I don't think it goes beyond that.
No, when he gets his license renewed, he pays $100, not $124.
That's correct.
Yeah. He doesn't pay $124.
Right.
He paid $24 initially.
Correct.
And so you can either say that the amount of controversy for the hearing of this matter would be the $24 that it costs to get his license, or the $100 of this in controversy, because arguably this is how much he's going to have to pay in the event that the court decides his license has to be suspended.
Correct.
But if it's suspended, he doesn't have to pay $124.
No, sir.
I'm still trying to understand. The only reason this case is not moot is if he wins on this appeal, he gets his $100 back. Because he'll never get his 90 days.
He'll get his 90 days back, but we're going to ask for the $100 back.
Yes. So that's what the live controversy is the $100.
Yes, that is correct. Whether we'll get it back or not, I don't know. I've never had to go through that procedure. And also, in talking about Toon, of course, there were four justices on this court that held that in that particular type of situation, there is really no amount of controversy. I noticed one of the justices in the majority is going to work at the White House, so I don't know if the court will re-examine that issue based upon the new configuration of the court. I agree with the dissent in that case that there is really no amount of controversy in these cases. In this driver's license case,
well, if that's the case, then what do we do with the decisions that have been made by this court that have exercised jurisdiction and other courts of appeal that exercise jurisdiction? Oh, dear. What happens to those judgments?
If
jurisdiction is never raised.
Jurisdiction is never raised. I'm not sure the answer to that. I think if you don't have jurisdiction, it's probably void.
So they're subject to collateral attack all over the state?
Subject to that, Judge.
How would you do that? By a bill of review?
I suppose.
Since a lot of them are old, I guess.
Yes, sir. And quite frankly, I'm a criminal defense attorney. I don't know how that would be attacked, but I remember from law school the bill of review.
Well, if I understand your statement to Chief Justice Phillips. All that's left, if you win a suspension deal, is you go back and try to get your $100 back because the suspension time is gone.
Yes, sir. I mean, that's over with, and you've basically been punished, which goes back to one of the questions the justice has asked. The Transportation Code has set up a review process within a county. The hearing officer that hears the driver's license suspension cases, that can be appealed by both sides to county courts of law or the county court or the district court. So there is some judicial review, and that review is done very quickly in my experience. And again, that prevents someone's license from being suspended and keeps it from being a moot issue, like basically what I'm arguing for the court now.
Are there collateral effects of having a suspension reversed on appeal? I assume that it wouldn't be grounds for expungement from the record, but is there any other tangential benefit you get from wiping out a suspension?
I believe there can be insurance consequences to that.
And what are those insurance?
I cannot answer
that. But that would be an evidentiary matter that would not be in the right of reference.
I would think so. I mean, this was never a case about jurisdictional amount under the general provisions of the Constitution.
What is there in the record in this case involving anything concerning the amount of controversy?
Nothing, Your Honor. It was not pled, and there was no evidence at trial concerning the amount of controversy.
Well, there was evidence that he was charged the $100 fine and paid it, I assume.
No, Your Honor, that is the reinstatement fee.
The reinstatement fee.
And I believe there was a letter sent to him that it's maybe or maybe not in evidence, but it was not ever proven at the at court that was in the hearing that was the situation.
Well, what's your response to our ability to take judicial notice of the benchmark insurance rates? Surely there's some value there.
I know that the rules of evidence allow a party to object to a court taking judicial notice of a fact and basically have it litigated. I suppose the court has the option of remanding the case back to the administrative law judge in order to prove or not prove that.
So you would say that the prerequisite hasn't been met for us to take judicial notice of the benchmark rates?
Yes. The trying to anticipate some of the rebuttal in the case. The partner petitioner has argued in their brief that because courts of appeals have assumed jurisdiction of these cases, that therefore that is some indication that of course that they do have jurisdiction. I will say that both Waco, 10th Court in Waco, and the 14th Court of Appeals in Department versus Calendar have re-examined their jurisdiction and basically reversed themselves once faced with this specific argument.
So there's a split among the courts of appeals on this?
That's correct, Your Honor. The 14th and the 10th, this case come down in respondent's favor. There are three courts of appeals who have held a contrary. So it's 2-3 right now.
And then there's a whole lot of other cases that have taken that have never considered jurisdiction.
That's correct, Your Honor. I guess we're waiting for a novel argument like I made to reconsider there.
You thought this out?
Yes.
Are there other? I'm trying to think of other examples that would show that the legislature does know the difference between these courts. One is that we can, when a judge has formerly been a judge and been out of practice and now wants to come back and sit, if they've been a former district judge, we have to screen that they're the right character to sit. But if they're a former county court judge only, then it's automatic. They have the right to sit. Are there other places like that where the legislature has, and the legislature knows that, they call it.
Right.
Are there other places where the legislature has sat down and said, well, here's these two identical courts, let's treat them very differently?
As to identical courts,
there's two rival schemes of courts out there, and let's not treat them the same. Do you have other examples that would maybe bolster that this is not? If we're really after the intent of the legislature, right, this just wasn't pure oversight.
I cannot think of another example specifically. I guess you're talking about disparate results.
Yes.
Well, and only by analogy, I could only mention that the transportation code prohibits or only allows the department to appeal questions of law to the courts of appeals or the court of appeals. To the county court at law or the constitutional county court or the district court, and allows the licensee to appeal factual as well as legal questions. That seems to be disparate, and I'm not sure what the reason is for that. Department's treated differently as far as judicial review of those decisions. And that would be the only particular example I could think of, Justice Phillips. There's also the argument I anticipate possibly in the rebuttal that the department will make that the legislature met in 1999 and before that time, after the Transportation Code and APA were joined, other courts of appeals in jurisdiction. In fact, they should have been aware of that and should have amended the statute. But my response to that is that it appears, at least to me, that this is a clear and unambiguous statute. And I don't know what the legislature could have done to fix what appears to be clear and ambiguous, other than, you know, perhaps legislation saying that when we say district courts, we mean district courts.
Well, one of the reasons, what other legislative intent can you glean for the for Chapter 524 of the Transportation Code to incorporate the APA other than to provide a right for appeal? I mean, why do it?
I believe this, Mr. Duncan mentioned the standard of proof, and there was one other, and I can't think of any other beyond his explanation.
Does it also set rules for evidence and procedure and those kind of things, too?
Yes, sir.
Did you consider those other reasons why they would incorporate?
I do. And, of course, judicial economy is certainly a reason that the legislature may have precluded appeals from county clerks.
Since we're making up arguments, what about the one I made up? that they limited it to the county courts to get them all over before the 90 days was gone.
I like that. And I think that could very well be valid because, of course, litigators in this field are faced with that specific problem, and a quick judicial review of these decisions is important. Of course, we don't know what the legislature intended other than the plain meaning of the statute. And I will say also that as far as disparate results, in the scheme of things now, only courts of appeals only having jurisdiction from a district court judgment, the department and the licensee are treated equally, and that both have, if they lose at the administrative hearing level, the right to appeal to the county courts of law. And if to the district court, it appeals to the courts of appeals. So there's no divergence treatment.
But there is a divergent treatment as to citizens of different counties under what is a state licensing scheme.
Correct.
So if I live in Dallas County, I don't get to appeal if my license is suspended beyond the county court at law. But if I live in one of the counties that are of the 30 or 40 that you indicated, then a citizen of that county gets to appeal.
That is.
Now, how do we deal with that circumstance when we're dealing with not a local licensing scheme, but in fact a state licensing scheme?
I think another possible interpretation is when the code talks about district courts, you're talking about district courts in Travis County, appealing of agency decisions.
So that would mean that even in the counties where the appeal from the administrative decision would go to a district court, it would still stop at that point. Your position would be that there would be no right to appeal those either.
I'm not saying that's my position, Your Honor. I'm saying that that is a possible interpretation of that statute and the legislative intent. Several different interpretations, but I think we all have to fall back on plain meaning of the statute. Notice my green light is on. That's all I have to offer for any further questions.
Anything else? Thank you, Counsel.
Mr. Duncan, why shouldn't
yes.
we look? If you look, what is the maximum suspension period under the licensing scheme? 90 days?
90 days under Chapter 724, which is the chapter under which he was suspended. I note that in Chapter 524, let me note two things about that, Justice Hankins. I mean, first of all, in the record, at Volume 1, page 68, we have the notice of suspension. The last paragraph before the signature block is, your driver's license or driving privilege will continue to be suspended beyond the suspension period until a $100 reinstatement fee is paid to the Department of Public Safety, and it also refers to any other fees required by law. The second is,
Go ahead.
The second is that under Chapter 524, under Section 0.022, the period of suspension under that section, which is admittedly for a different reason, it's for failure to breath test, but it's the period of suspension may vary depending upon the person's prior alcohol-related or drug-related enforcement contact during the last 5 years. So a Chapter 724 suspension can have an impact on the period of suspension in Chapter 524. That's another consequence.
And how long, what's the maximum suspension period, separate and apart from the failure to pay the reinstatement fee?
The maximum suspension period? Well, under Chapter 524, are you asking under Chapter 724?
Well, either in terms of the types of appeals that we're trying to decide in this case.
The maximum seems to be 180 days.
Okay. But most of them are 90 days.
Apparently, yes.
Given the normal appellate timetables, allowing time from date of judgment for the record to be filed, for each side to brief, we're going to be outside the 90-day suspension period before the Court of Appeals could ever look at the case, much less be able to decide that. If that is in fact the case, then how can we determine that, in fact, in the absence of explicit statutory language or specific evidence of legislative intent, that the legislature intended these types of license suspensions to go beyond the determination of the county court at law? It would seem to me that there's an argument that the intent was that it stops there given the time period involved.
I have two responses to that. First, we believe that there is a value served by appellate review, and the legislature may have intended this value to be served, that goes beyond the resolution of a particular case. Obviously, the legislature is concerned about someone whose license is suspended expunging that from their record if that is in fact what happens, and also avoiding these future consequences. However, the legislature can also be concerned with the uniformity of legal principle in this very important area of public safety law. This Court's Morales decision shows the value of appellate review in establishing a uniform legal principle so that the department knows when and how to suspend licenses in the first place. And so that value is also served by appellate review, and we think the legislature can take that into account.
Well, if the legislature, if that value is so important, it would not have been difficult for the legislature to have specifically provided for appellate review.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. The legislature could have done a better job in this case.
Sorry to interrupt you, but it seems to me your argument cannot be that there is a reasonable there's a reasonable basis for us to say that even though the legislature didn't include county courts, it really meant to, and so we're going to. It seems to me that's one argument that
and
is not likely to prevail.
And that is not my argument.
The more serious argument is by excluding county courts, it has produced an absurd result. Meaning you have in some county, just by the happenstance of where you live and whether or not you elected a lawyer or judge or something, you produce this odd result. But it seems to me that's not an absurd result. That's more like an equal protection argument that's not made in this case.
Well, first of all, Justice Enoch, the first argument that you made is not our argument. We are not arguing that there is an omission from APA 901, because APA 901 pre-existed Chapter 524 and was then applied or incorporated.
Well, you're arguing that we ought to interpret district court to mean county court.
No, I am arguing that district court in the context of Chapter 524 means a final trial court determination, because that's all that it really means in terms of the APA framework, given the default place
so
for
district, the use of district court in that statute is not a term of art, it's a generic term.
Yes, it is a generic term that should be interpreted broadly by this court as meaning a trial court determination. Trial court determinations, I say on
except
that.
Except appellate courts in Texas are called district courts, too.
That's very strange.
Not exactly. It's the 5th District of Texas.
11th? That's true.
It's
the
5th.
I see that I'm out of time. Have I answered your question?
And the first.
Yes,
any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the argument, and we'll take a brief recess.
All rise.